Welcome everyone from around the world, from Dubai, the Philippines, to England, London, Japan, China. I tell you, welcome Italy too, and let's not forget our kissing cousins, Canada. Welcome to the show. We're so glad that you're joining us today. Well, it's In the Studio with Linus. It's Wednesday. Hello. The phone number to the show is 646-727-2914. We discuss hot topics, news of the day, tackle hard subject matter, definitely sports, because you know I'm an NFL girl, so we may not always be on the same page or agreement, but that's what makes this show special. You're entitled to agree or disagree. Isn't that wonderful? Keep an open mind and continue to think outside of the box. As a close friend told me, The Truth is a Lie, which is also his book by that title, by Mr. Arthur Harry Petsanas. Please join us in the chat room with your opinions or call us on the show phone, 646-727-2914. Our website is www.theessenceofsuccess.net. If there is a subject you would like to see discussed, well, contact us on the website, or you can leave a message or comment. We are here to empower you and make you think. We don't have all the answers, but we will find the questions to be answered and understood. Thank you for supporting and listening to the show. My hope is that each show will give you food for thought, as they say, something to think about and discuss around the water cooler. Okay. Well, to start off, I've got a lot of news, but I also have a lot of sports today because, you know, preseason NFL starts tomorrow, so I'm going to give you the lineup, schedule of the games. And then also there's a big thing about the NCAA being hypocritical, so I got a little clip for you on that one. And then we're going to I'll go ahead and give you the ESPN, of course, scores on all the games that's going right now, you know, which is mainly MLB and I think a few soccer games. So I'll give you those scores. And then we'll get into the news portion of the show. So let's begin. And here, let me do this because we're going to need this in a minute. Okay, so let's start off with the 2019 pre-week one, everybody, ladies and gentlemen, for the NFL season, which begins tomorrow, Thursday, August 8th. So this is pre-week one now. Okay, so I'm going to give you as much information as possible, where everybody's playing, what time is the game, and so forth, okay? So first up, New York Jets and the New York Giants are playing, and It's at 7 p.m. I don't know. They're not telling me if these are away or home games. But anyway, oh, MetLife, New York. Okay, that's in the Giants. So New York Jets and New York Giants are playing tomorrow night at 7 p.m. And for the TV, it's on the NFLN Network. Tickets are still available. They're $21 starting at Indianapolis and Buffalo at 7 p.m. tomorrow night at the New Era Field. Tickets are still available. They're starting at $9.94. Now, Jacksonville and Baltimore will be playing at 7:30 at the M&T Bank Stadium. Excuse me. Tickets are still on sale starting at $13.10. Atlanta and Miami are going to be playing at 7:30 at the Hard Rock Stadium in Miami. Tickets are still available starting at $9.94. And then we've got New England at Detroit. That ought to be a good first game. I'd like to see that one. At 7:30 at Ford Field. Those tickets are starting at $29.48. Okay. Next game up, Washington and Cleveland at 7:30 p.m. in the First Energy Stadium. Those tickets are still available starting at 18:31. Tennessee at Philadelphia. That ought to be a good game, too. 7:30 p.m., and they're playing at the Lincoln Financial Field. Those tickets are starting at 22:34, still available. Houston is at Green Bay. That's at 8 p.m. in Lambeau Field, which is Green Bay. And those tickets are still available at $14.90. Carolina is playing Chicago. And you know what? I bet you the Panthers win. I should have been doing some predictions while I was doing this. Anyway, their game, Carolina and Chicago, is at 8 p.m. at Soldier Field in Chicago. Tickets are starting at $27.24. L.A. Chargers are playing Arizona at 10 p.m. And remember, it's on the NFLN Network. State Farm Stadium. Tickets are starting at $9.94, still available, and Denver will be at Seattle at 10 p.m. at CenturyLink Field. Now, the times that I gave you are all Eastern times because they're not really playing at 10 p.m. They're actually playing at 7, so it's 10 p.m. on the TV, right? Okay. Now, those tickets for the Denver and the Seattle Seahawks game are starting at $53.34, and we still have tickets available. Now, on Friday, August 9th, we have two games. We have Tampa Bay and Pittsburgh at 7:30, also on the NFL Network at Heinz Field. Those tickets are $15.52. Minnesota and New Orleans at 8 p.m. in the Mercedes-Benz Superdome, which, of course, is in New Orleans. Those tickets are starting at $14.90, still available. The next game, our next day games, are Saturday, August 10th. Cincinnati is playing Kansas City. I'd like to see what Kansas City is bringing forth this season. That game is at 8 p.m. at the Arrowhead Stadium. Tickets are still available at $14.89. Then we've got the L.A. Rams playing Oakland, y'all, at 8 p.m. in the Oakland Coliseum. What? Tickets starting at $13.50. And then last but not least, the Dallas Cowboys are playing the San Francisco 49ers at 9 p.m. on the NFL Network, and they're playing at Levi's Stadium. Tickets are starting at $31.02. And that, folks, is your preview, or your schedule, I should say, for the games coming up for pre-week one. How about that? Okay. Now coming at you is Mark Kellerman blasts the NCAA for implementing new requirements for the agents of NBA draft hopefuls, okay? Kellerman says that the NCAA has no business being involved in athlete representation and calls the new rules stupid and condescending. Ryan Clark adds that the criteria is blatantly in response to how Rich Paul and his clients, including LeBron James, have taken control of the NBA careers. So here you go. I want you to hear this little clip.
In full effect, Ryan, I'll start with you. obviously as a former college athlete, what's your biggest problem with the NCAA's new agent?
You know, what's crazy is it's actually believable. It's one of the worst businesses in the world, the way that they treat what they've now called in this new rule the athlete client. It's not an athlete client. All before, it was just a student athlete. So you should not be representing them in any form of business that comes after going to school and playing for the universities they attend. And if you look at this, this is flagrant and it's blatant in response to the way that Rich Paul, his clients, and the other athletes that he is involved in have really taken control of their careers and taken that control away from NBA owners, right, and NBA as an organization as a whole. What this has shown and what Rich Paul has shown that the same way that these owners and that the other people make their way in life through connections, through relationships, through aligning yourself with the right people and having the proper life experiences, which is the way they got rich, right? The way they got to be in meetings that other people couldn't be in, that now it's not okay because Rich Paul is doing. It's not okay because LeBron James is a part of it. And the NCAA has no right in its misguided attempts to say that they're protecting the player and protecting the student to affect the way that they do business once they leave that school.
First of all, it's, you know, LeBron tweets out the Rich Paul rule, and people are noticing, hey, some of these qualifications would preclude Rich Paul from doing it, so therefore the Rich Paul rule. But, in fact, Rich Paul doesn't actually traffic in the kind of stuff that the school addresses,
yeah.
Right? Hey, you know, whatever. And maybe the rule people say can say with the best of intentions, right, if the intentions are pure, at least consciously or superficially. We want to protect players from, you know, like relatives, you know, who don't know what they're doing representing them. Although Kawhi Leonard's uncle seems to have done a very good job. My point is this. Who the hell is the NCAA to tell anyone who they can deputize to represent their interests? Of all the condescending, paternalist, but especially controlling nonsense, this is an organization that has behaved despicably consistently through the years as it relates to their attitude toward the athletes. They need to protect this veneer of amateurism because that's what they're selling back to you. Right? This is not the best leagues below the NBA in the world or anything like that. They're selling, but it's more popular than, like, the G League or the D League or whatever name it happens to go by at the moment because of the veneer of amateurism, right? And therefore you can connect it to the tradition and have some kind of sense, at least superficially, that it's purer than professional sports. It's utter nonsense. Look, once people are interested in amateurism or college basketball, fine. But once you point the camera at it and you start selling advertising and we get paid to talk about it and the school makes money and everyone that advertises, everyone's making money, but the students are getting paid. That's just exploitation of labor, period. That's all it is. And the NCAA has always, an organization that I don't know really if we need it to exist anymore or if we ever really did need it to exist, to tell you the truth, should be really looking at their long-term horizons and saying, hey, we're facing an existential crisis. When enough people wake up and realize they don't really need us, we're not going to exist anymore. Let's get out ahead of this. Instead, they're going backwards and they're trying to double down and entrench whatever kind of control they have.
How come it only applies to basketball players?
And then there is...
Okay, the predominantly black sport.
No doubt, Molly, I was going to say. And then there's an obvious racial component to this. It only applies to basketball, and why is that? Why do they think they can get away with that, or even in that area, dictating who you can say that person represents me? And then this list of qualifications, which Rich Paul wouldn't qualify for, right? But how has he done? As not that he traffics in what this rule covers, but if someone did who had Rich Paul's background, does that mean they wouldn't be a good representative?
No.
How many better representatives are there?
How many more life lessons?
Well,
I have a master's degree.
Well,
how many more life lessons did you learn outside
also,
of school?
Also, the other part of it when it comes to the racial part is not just about the people who will be represented. It's about the people representing them. It's about the way that looks. And when you go to the qualifications, it does go to the next generation of Rich Pauls, the guy that's coming up through the ranks and understands that life experiences and connections and relationships can better can better help me in advising these guys, in mentoring these guys, and representing these guys than going to school. And so when you see that, though, it's the NCAA trying to keep institutional control over these young men. And they've done this without wanting to pay players, without allowing players to have control of their own likeness and make money off of that. And this is just another misguided attempt to show you that the separation of ownership and labor in this is a large gap. It is huge. You will not take control of your own being.
Also, is the NCAA's argument here, or the reasoning behind this stupid new rule, is it even, well, we believe we're putting rules in place that will increase, that will make sure that the kind of the efficacy, the effectiveness of the representatives will go up for the students? Since when are they worried about the students' financial interests?
Yes.
And why is that their business to worry about?
And of all the rules to worry that they need to change and work on, why was this the focus?
The point is the NCAA keeps insisting that there needs to be amateurism. They shouldn't be professionals, that this is student athletics, even though you can play in the school band, it's still kind of record deal, right? But okay. But they keep insisting on that. In that case, why is it their damn business? Who the athlete chooses to represent their professional interests? It's the whole thing is hypocritical and absurd. Thanks for watching ESPN on YouTube.
Okay, so there you go. You got it. That's the rest of the story. Oh, boy. Something else, ain't it? Okay, y'all, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be right on back. So don't you go anywhere. All right. See you in a few. Welcome back. You're listening to In the Studio with Linus here on the Essence of Success Radio Network. The phone number to the show is 646-727-2914. That's 646-727-2914. Well, now let's start looking at some scores and see what's going on. Now, you know right now there's a live game, the Brewers and the Pirates, and right now it's at the bottom of the sixth with two outs, and the Milwaukee Brewers is 8 and the Pirates is 1. Yes, they sure are. It's 8-1. Milwaukee's ahead. Okay, New York Yankees at the top of the seventh, and they're playing Baltimore. New York Yankees is 11 and Baltimore is 1. Top of the sixth, we've got Kansas City with 2 and Boston Red Sox 4 with 1 out. Okay, here's your finals for baseball. New York Mets beat Miami 7-2. Cleveland beat Texas 2-0. Atlanta beat Minnesota 11-7. That sounds like that New York Yankees score, huh? Houston beat COL 14-3. Wow, they just kind of stomped on them, huh? And then final for Los Angeles Dodgers was 2. They won. They beat the Steelers 2-1. Okay. Let's see if there's anything going on in soccer. Okay, world soccer scores. For the 2019 Club Friendly, we got Barcelona 2, Napoli 1, which is Naples. Barcelona's winning. Also, at 7 o'clock, Rain Against Thorns will be playing at 7 p.m., and that'll be Pacific time. Also at 7 p.m., and that's the women's, I'm sorry, y'all. That's the 2019 National Women's Soccer League. And also at 7 p.m., this is also the National Women's Soccer League, is the Royals and the Sky Blue will be playing. And it looks like that's all I have for scores this week. You know what, isn't the Little League World Series going on? Okay, final, we've got LA 6, Texas 2, final GA, I don't know if that's Georgia, but Virginia beat them 12-2. Okay, so there we go with that. Okay, so there's the rest of your sports scores. Now, let's get into some news items. You know, you'd be missing me doing my little news and talking bad about the people, huh? Okay, now here's a story from James Comey. Remember who James Comey is, the past director of the FBI? Let me tell you what he has to say about how Trump is exploiting racism. America has long had a radioactive racist soup in the center of our national life. Donald Trump thinks he's stirring it up for political benefit. He's actually doing something more dangerous. For much of our history, the soup was deadly and uncontained, spewing radiation that led to the enslavement, terrorization, murder, and oppression of African Americans. 100 years ago this summer, it erupted on the streets of Washington, leaving dozens dead. A dean of Howard University narrowly escaped being lynched. The murders, beatings, and threats erupted in countless places during the first 200 years of American life. To visit the National Museum of African American History and Culture is to discover that violence and mistreatment is beyond count, but not beyond imagination. Yet something good happened over the last 50 years. America started to get control of the dangerous radiation. We erected a containment building made up of laws. We passed statutes making the abuse and mistreatment of people by virtue of their race a crime. More importantly, we began enforcing the laws we already had. It was a statutory crime to kill another human being. It just wasn't against the law in practice to kill a black person in many places. The rights to vote and to equal treatment sounded muscular on paper, but they were weaklings in much of America. Slowly, slowly, that began to change through progress at ballot boxes and jury boxes, in police stations, rooms, and classrooms. But the containment building of law was only part of the solution. Radioactivity lasts for centuries. and it can still blow the lid off the building. True safety lies in control rods pushed down into the soup to calm it, to cool it. Those control rods in America were cultural. The dream of organizational culture, Edgar Schrein teaches that culture has three layers. The artifacts of a culture are symbols and signs. It's espoused values, the things we say we believe, and most importantly, its underlying assumptions the way things really are. Americans' artifacts and espoused values were always impressive. We displayed across the land our inspiring declaration that all men are created equal and endowed by their Creator with unalienable rights. We amended the Constitution after slaves were freed to make clear that black citizens were entitled to equal rights and equal treatment. Our problem was that what laid underneath all that, the way things really were despite what we taught in civics class, cultures are dysfunctional when the underlying assumption don't line up with the values we claim to hold dear. For a very long time, America was seriously out of alignment. But we slowly worked to change the underlying assumptions. It became unacceptable to refer to black people by racist names, to utter racist tropes, to run for office on racist themes. It took decades, but we got to a place where it generally wasn't tolerated in boardrooms or in bars. Leaders who said racist things were often ostracized, forced to apologize, to say publicly they were deeply sorry that they were acted in a way that offended our culture. Even in the secretly harbored racist thoughts, elected officials sent a message that whatever our differences, this kind of crap wasn't okay. Racists watched them closely for the wink, the signal that didn't mean it. They didn't mean it. When they didn't get the signal, the racism was suppressed by a new cultural norm. Racism didn't go away, of course. The soup still bubbled, but the control rods of our culture, our underlying assumptions, reduce the danger. Today, the control rods are being lifted with each racist assault on a judge, an athlete, a country, a member of Congress, or a city. And with each kind word for very fine people on both sides. Our president allows the stew to boil and radiate more dangerously. You can feel the effect in the FBI's burgeoning caseload of hate crimes and white supremacist investigations, and in a stadium full of Americans who, even knowing they're on television, chant in unison, center back. That burst of negative energy was met not by efforts to control it, but by 13 seconds of presidential silence, the same silence that his fellow Republicans have adopted. Our president thinks he is doing something clever. He lists the control rods for a calculated and deeply cynical purpose. To harness the political energy unleashed, it will heat his reelection bid, he likely thinks, but unconstrained, it will damage the nation in all directions. Only fools believe they can ride the gamma rays of hate. According to a manifesto widely attributed to him, the Texas terrorists who killed at least 20 people in El Paso on Saturday, I may need to get a drink of water. Killed 20 people in El Paso on Saturday was directly motivated by Donald Trump. But he is a horrific example of what happens when the control rods are lifted. Every American president, knowing what lies deep within our country, bears a unique responsibility to say loudly and consistently that white supremacy is illegitimate, that encouraging a politics of racial resentment can spawn violence, and that violence aimed at people by virtue of their skin color is terrorism. Mr. President, because of what you have done, you owe us more than condolences sent via Twitter. You must stop trying to unleash and exploit the radioactive energy of racism. You hold the biggest control rod of all. You must push it back into place for all our sakes. The vast majority of Americans believe the core ideas of our founding documents. Do we expect our culture to reflect those ideas? Show us your belief in them, too. Thank you, James Comey, for that article. That was just, wow, just great. Okay, we're going back, and how about that? That was a powerful article. Because it took me, it took me right out of Blog Talk Radio. It was so good, huh? That's okay. We're going right back. We're going right back because we're already logged in, and so we're headed to the studio. Yes, indeed. I hope everybody's having a good week. I know today is Wednesday, as some people say hump day, but it's still a good day in the neighborhood. Okay. All right, let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back in 2 minutes. I'm going to go drink some water. Thank you. And we're back. You're listening to You're listening to In the Studio with Linus here on the Essence of Success Radio Network. Sorry, I was drinking some more water. Okay, now we're going to the news. Hello. Two countries issued travel warnings about the United States after a weekend of mass shooting. Do y'all blame them? Huh? Somebody better say something. Two countries issued travel warnings to their citizens about the United States following two mass shootings that killed 31 people. Both Venezuela and Uruguay warned their residents about violence and hate crimes in the United States Monday. Yeah, think? Uruguay's Office of Foreign Ministry issued an advisory Monday saying citizens should take precaution amid the growing indiscriminatory violence, specifically hate crimes including racism and discrimination when traveling to the United States. The alert noted that other factors such as the indiscriminate possession of firearms by the population and the impossibility of authorities to prevent these situations. Hello, somebody. Were among some of the reasons travelers need to be particularly wary of highly populated areas of events. Uruguay warnings also suggested avoiding the cities of Detroit, Baltimore, and Albuquerque, as they were listed as part of the 20 most dangerous cities in the world, according to the CEO World Magazine 2019 Index. Venezuela's Foreign Ministry Office also issued a warning to residents Monday saying Venezuelans should postpone their travels or exercise caution when traveling as a result of the events in El Paso, Texas, and Dayton, Ohio. The statement posted by the Foreign Ministry said that the recent proliferation of violent acts and hate crimes need to be considered by those planning to travel into the United States. These increasing acts of violence have found an echo support in the conversations and actions impregnated by racial discrimination and hatred against migrant populations pronounced and executed by the supremacist elite who holds political power in Washington, the statement read in part. According to the statement, one of the main reasons for the violent acts in the United States is the inexcusable, indiscriminate possession of firearms by the population, encouraged by the United States federal government. Hello. In April, the United States State Department gave Venezuela its highest travel advisory, level 4. Do not travel, citing crime, civil unrest, and the arbitrary arrest and detention of United States citizens. Venezuela was ranked as the most dangerous country in the world for the second straight year, according to a Gallup survey in 2018. It's one of the 13 countries issued the highest advisory. Uruguay is listed as a level 2 exercise increased caution on the State Department's travel advisory list. The advisory was issued due to violent crimes, the website said. Yeah, Venezuela, you've been up for 2 years, but Uruguay, it sounds like the United States is trying to get back at y'all for doing that, to be honest with you, okay? But, I don't blame you. I wouldn't come here either, not right now. Puerto Rico news. Wanda Vasquez becomes Puerto Rico's third governor in a week after island's highest court ruling. Puerto Rico's Justice Secretary Wanda Vasquez became the third person in a week to occupy the post of governor in the U.S. territory. Vasquez was sworn in today, Wednesday afternoon, hours after the island Supreme Court unanimously ruled that part of the law used by embattled Governor Ricardo Rosello to name Pedro Pierluisi as his successor was unconstitutional. Okay. At the position by constitutional provisions and by the opinion of law, but with the greatest respect and determination to serve my people and to push Puerto Rico forward, said Vasquez in a statement, after being sworn in as Puerto Rico Supreme Court in San Juan. It is with great humility and commitment that I assume this position to direct the destinies of our country with responsibility and delivery. Vasquez, who was appointed in 2017, is seen as loyal to Rosello, and protesters gathered in front of the governor's mansion shortly after she was sworn in. The hashtag Wanda Renacion, in other words, Wanda resigned, was already trendy on Twitter. The Supreme Court decision came after Senate President Thomas Riviera Schatz filed a lawsuit Monday asking courts to immediately remove Pelosi from his post based on the fact that the events didn't follow the Constitution. Vasquez is a member of the political party in power, which supports statehood for Puerto Rico, as well as Rosario Pierluisi and Riviera Schatz. Rosario had chosen Pierluisi to fill the Secretary of State vacancy left by Luis G. Rivera Marin, who resigned last month over his involvement in the chat scandal that led to Rosario's resignation after weeks of historic protests. According to Puerto Rico Constitution, the island Secretary of State is next in line if the governor's position is vacant. But at the core of the legal dispute was a question of whether Pierluisi was a legitimate Secretary of State in a position to become Rosario's rightful successor to begin with. Okay? It's unconstitutional to allow Secretary of State to become governor without having been confirmed by both legislative chambers, the Supreme Court said in a press release. While Pierluisi had been confirmed as Secretary of State by Puerto Rico House of Representatives an hour before he took his oath as governor Friday, the island Senate had never taken a vote on the nomination. Senate President Riviera Schatz postponed the vote to this week after Rosario's resignation became official, but that vote never happened. Instead, Schatz went to court arguing that Pierluisi did not occupy the position of Secretary of State in property because he wasn't confirmed by both houses. Pierluisi, a former resident and commissioner and an attorney, argued that wasn't the only way that the Secretary of State could be ratified. In his defense, Pierluisi cited the Law of Succession of 2005, which incorporated a recommendation made by the island's Department of Justice that waives a Secretary of State confirmation requirement in case of an emergency. Vasquez is both Puerto Rico's second female governor and second unelected governor in 7 decades. She has voiced her lack of interest in occupying the position, and she has faced opposition from Puerto Ricans who said her as a part of Rosario's inner circle. Last week, the hashtag Wanda Resign started trending after Rosario hinted in his resignation address that she would most probably succeed him. Since at the time he had named Pierluisi as Secretary of State, Vasquez initially described the leaked chats that ousted Rosario as incorrect but not illegal. She later announced that she would recuse herself from any investigation because she was mentioned in the chats. Minutes before Vasquez was sworn in, Pierluisi issued a statement, "I wish the Honorable Wanda Vasquez Garcia the greatest success as governor of Puerto Rico. I will always be in the best disposition to advance in any initiative that seeks to improve the quality of life of our people and to encourage the federal government to fulfill its responsibility to provide support that Puerto Rico needs for its recovery and reconstruction." Okay, local news outlets reported last month that the Office of Government Ethics will investigate conversations between Vasquez and former top administration officially over her decision not to investigate allegations about the mishandling of a much-needed post-hurricane provisions. Okay, and that is the rest of the story out of Puerto Rico. Okay, let's see, what else? Okay, Schumer, oh yeah. Okay, Schumer blasts red flag gun legislation as an effective cop-out. Senate Minority Leader Charles Schumer, Democrat of New York, on Wednesday poured cold water on red flag legislation that is gaining traction among some Senate Republicans in the wake of a pair of mass shootings over the weekend, calling the measure an ineffective cop-out. The notion that passing a tepid or tepid, however you want to pronounce it, version of the Extreme Risk Protection Order, ERPO bill, alone is even close to getting the job done in addressing rampant gun violence in the United States is wrong and would be an effective cop-out, Schumer said in a statement, quote-unquote. He added that Democrats are not going to settle for half measures so Republicans can feel better and try to push the issue of gun violence off to the side. Schumer's comments come as several Republican senators have floated passing legislation to provide incentives for states to pass red flag laws in response to last weekend's mass shooting in Dayton, Ohio, and El Paso, Texas. Could that be like Moscow Mitch taking money from the lobbyists not to have safety and security of the voting machines? Sounds real familiar. Red flags, as discussed by Republicans, would let family members petition for court orders to prevent dangerous individuals from being able to buy a gun. It would also let family members petition for court orders to have law enforcement temporarily remove a firearm. Republican senators Marco Rubio, Rob Portman, and Lindsey Graham have talked about the idea of passing legislation that will provide grants to states to enact the laws. Why do you have to do that? Can't the states just vote on it, period? Why do you have to give them money? See, all this money talks and bullshit walks. I'm so sick of that shit, y'all. Why do they have to give you money? You know that that law needs to be passed. Pass the damn fucking law. Shouldn't have to give you money to enact the law. President Trump also name-checked the idea during the White House speech on Monday, while Senator John Thune of South Dakota, the number two Senate Republican, told the Argus leader that he was confident Congress will be able to find common ground on the so-called red flag issue. But Democrats have honed in on trying to pressure Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, that bastard, into passing a House bill that would implement universal background checks in the wake of the two mass shootings. Yeah, I'm agreeing with you, Schumer. Even the strongest extreme risk protection order legislation won't be fully effective without strong universal background checks. As long as a gun show and online sale loopholes exist, someone prohibited from possessing a gun under an ERPO law could still purchase a firearm far too easily, Schumer said in a statement. The House passed this background check bill earlier this year with only 8 Republicans voting for it. Let me repeat that. The House passed its background check bill earlier this year with only 8 Republicans voting for it. The Senate companion bill has 42 backers, none of whom are Republicans, leaving it well short of the 60 votes needed to pass the chamber and head to Trump's desk. The White House has threatened to veto the bill. But Schumer added that Democrats would try to force a vote on the House bill if Republicans bring red flag legislation to the Senate floor. Democrats in the Senate will seek to require that ERPO bill that comes to the floor is accompanied by a vote on the House pass universal background checks legislation. I'm in total agreement with you on this, Schumer. You got my vote. Okay, and that is the rest of the news. You know what? Maybe next Wednesday y'all bring in, I haven't done this in a long time, news of the weird. Remember, make you laugh. You know, silly stuff. But anyway, I want to thank you for joining me today. I do appreciate it, and I enjoy bringing the news. And do watch the NFL games tomorrow, y'all. They're going to be good. It'll be the first pre-week, right? So we can see how they're coming out, starting out from the gate. All right, have a good rest of the week, and if no one's told you they love you today, well, I do, and thank you for joining us on In the Studio with Lennis.